Getting answers about your health, wealth, and employment, and how it's been impacted by COVID-19. This is the Power Panel on the iHeartRadio Canada Talk Network.
Hey, it's Mark Tuohy back with you. We are taking your questions now live until 2 p.m. Give us a call at 877-518-5151. And you can text me at 71010 with questions as well. Our experts with us this afternoon from 1:30 to 2, Dr. Marla Shapiro, CTV medical specialist. And also joining us now will be Howard Levitt, employment and labor lawyer with Levitt LLP, host of Employment Law across much of the iHeartRadio Talk Network, Sundays at 1 p.m. Let's start with you, Dr. Shapiro. I've got a bunch of very short and quick questions off the text board to get us rolling. How long does this virus survive on different surfaces?
So we've seen all types of different reports. Initially, people were talking about 9 days on metal objects. There's been a report in the New England Journal of Medicine looking at how long and different surfaces. So it's a droplet. We know from the studies, and again, these are studies that we recreate, so what it does in the real world may be somewhat different or a little different. Suspended for about 30 minutes, probably alive for 3 hours with decay, meaning a half-life. So the amount of viral load decays after the first hour, second hour, third hour. On paper products, for example, it's probably hours as opposed to days, probably because of the porous nature of the paper, we think. And on harder surfaces, glass, metal, copper, you're looking at days, probably 4 to 5 days or so. It's going to be variable. These are all theoretical, but it points out to the importance of cleaning surfaces and washing your hands.
Let's stick with you, Doc. This one from a listener in Orangeville, Ontario. My daughter's type 1 diabetic and in her third trimester of pregnancy. What's her level of risk if she gets COVID-19? Is she more susceptible?
So the first is the issue. Let's talk about pregnancy as opposed to pregnancy versus diabetes or the two together. We have small numbers of data on pregnant women. We haven't had the virus around long enough so that we know what happens to an exposure in the first trimester and delivery at the end of the third trimester. But what we've seen in the series is that we have not seen maternal fetal transfer of the virus. We're not seeing babies in moms who are ill being born with the virus. The one baby that was reported they felt was a post-delivery exposure. So that's reassuring. In terms of level of risk, we typically think of pregnant women as being at higher levels of risk when it comes to things like influenza, which is why we do an influenza vaccine. We so far are not seeing that, but we don't have enough numbers to really know what the risk in pregnancy is. Thirdly, adding on to the diabetes is a comorbidity. Hard to predict what would happen. Let's keep her safe. Let her keep washing her hands, physical distancing as much as possible.
Thanks very much. Howard Levitt, welcome to the Power Panel. This question is for you, also comes from the text board. What's the process for laying off staff? Do they need an ROE, record of employment, to get employment insurance if you want to recall them? What do you
do? Well, they do, but I would not consider that to be the major risk. And I think perhaps because of government announces, we're inadvertently and probably improperly focusing on that. But that's not the liability employers have. In fact, there's no liability respecting whether or not they get EI. The issue is this. A layoff at law of a non-union employee is a constructive dismissal. So as you lay off employees, thinking perhaps you're doing them a favor rather than firing them, you're giving them the rights to sue you for full wrongful dismissal damages up to 24 months' pay. So you've got to be very careful. What I recommend to my employer clients is you give employees a choice. The choice is, in the current crisis, we can terminate you, and you'll, of course, be entitled to wrongful dismissal damages, although it's going to take a long time to get there with the courts closed right now. Although, in any event, it would still take a couple of years to get to court, so it may not be a problem at the end of the day. Or we can lay you off with a guarantee that if business flourishes again and we're able to recall you, we will. And a lot of employees will take the choice of an unpaid layoff given that choice. We just go ahead and lay them off. Yes, they'll get EI. You'll get it immediately right now with the legislative changes. But that's pretty insignificant compared to wrongful dismissal damages.
Well, Howard, hold that thought, because I want to bring Peter into the conversation, because he sounds like he's on the other end of that stick as an employee. Peter in Toronto, go ahead.
Yeah, I just came back from a trip, and I'm self-isolating, and I called my boss, told him I'd be back in 2 weeks. And after 1 week, they called me first and said I'm being temporarily laid off for 13 weeks, and they followed it up with a letter and asking me, of course, to sign that letter, which I won't, but I just wonder what my rights are. I didn't think they could lay me off. I did verbally ask them for a package at that time, and they were going to get back to me.
Well, they have to give you a package if you don't accept the layoff. That is the reality. So right now, you've been wrongfully dismissed. I mean, I can tell you what you'd be entitled to if you want to quickly give me your position, length of service, remuneration, and age.
Yeah, I'm Director of Special Projects. I reported to the president. I've been there for 9 years. Do you want my salary?
Your overall remuneration, total remuneration, and your age, yes.
Yeah, so with bonus, I was around $118,000 a year.
And your age?
72 years old.
Oof. Well, I would think a court would give you about 16 months' pay. So that's your alternative to accepting the layoff.
Okay.
Now, understand, at the end of the day, if they don't ever recall you, you'd be entitled to sue for wrongful dismissal then. But a lot of employees take the choice of suing for wrongful dismissal now. And also, there's an issue about, obviously, financial viability for many employers. So the sooner you start your claim, the more likely you are to be paid than if you wait a while.
Okay. Yeah, that's the route I would like to take. So.
Excellent. Thank you very much for that call. I've got a question on the text board here that I think all of us want the answer to, and it's for Dr. Shapiro from Pickering. It seems that they keep reassuring people by saying most of the folks who've died also had underlying health issues. But, you know, I have asthma, says the reader. I do too, by the way, Doc. Has anyone without an underlying health condition died?
The answer to that is yes. We see a number of trends. So we see the older you are, the more likelihood of mortality, the more comorbidities you have, the likely you are to have mortality. But we've seen mortality in 20 to 50-year-olds as well without necessarily underlying diseases. So when we talk about these trends, we talk about, you know, where the highest yield is in terms of where we see death as outcomes. But and really that's most of what we're seeing, which is why people are feeling reassured that in younger age groups, they'll get the disease and it won't be as severe. But that's not necessarily the case. We are seeing spectrums of diseases in all age groups.
Hmm. So, yeah, I was hoping that I'd be okay. Let's hear from Mike in Mississauga. He's got a question for Howard Levitt.
Hi. I'm a City of Toronto non-union office worker, and there are rumors that HR is going to try to redeploy us to the front lines in homeless shelters and long-care homes. They'll say that they're going to provide training and personal protective equipment, but I've got no background in public health or frontline care or dealing with mental illness that you might encounter in those areas. And I don't want to go in a high-risk area and possibly bring it home to my wife and kids. So I'm wondering, can I say no?
Well, here's the situation. If it's actually dangerous, given your level of training, given the equipment they give you, given everything else, you have the right to ask for an occupational health and safety inspector to attend the workplace and make that determination for you. If they say it is, in your circumstances, with this virus, dangerous, you don't have to do it. If they say it's not dangerous, then you have to continue, whatever your personal comfort is or isn't.
Thanks.
Okay. And then if I were to say no, then basically face the repercussions?
I'm not quite hearing you, but if they say you have to work, you say no, you may well have resigned your employment at that point.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Howard. This one for Dr. Shapiro from the text board. Dr. Mitch, earlier on in the program, Dr. Mitch Shulman was recommending the flu shot. How long, though, until you get some protection from the flu shot, and how useful might it be in this case?
So the reason, Mitch, is I believe recommending the flu shot is the same reason I recommend the flu shot. Influenza is still circulating, and that's a completely separate virus that causes a different disease. It causes very many similar symptoms, but the cause is influenza.
So an influenza vaccine protects you against influenza. The vaccine we have this year is 40 to 60% successful against the circulating strains. It will not give you any protection to COVID at all. But we don't want you to have two illnesses and only be focusing on COVID and not worry about the regular influenza. Remember, about 90% or more of the tests we've had in people are negative, which means they've got something other than COVID, which may be influenza. So mounting immune responses is usually over a couple of weeks after you get the vaccine. So if you have not had an influenza vaccine, you should absolutely have one, not because it will protect you against COVID, but because it will protect you against the influenza.
Thanks, Doc. Howard, a quick question from the text board at 71010. This one comes from Barrie, Ontario. It sounds like this person has two part-time jobs. They've been laid off from one. Can they collect EI for that while they still work the other job?
Yes. Well, they can. It depends upon how much income they're making, whether they're eligible for EI. So they might be able to, they may not be able to, depending on the eligibility requirements. And I can't say that with a lot more information. But the government website on this is pretty explicative, and they might want to take a look at it and see if they qualify. But it's a matter of, for example, if you're making replacement income from your employer, this isn't quite the same point. You can't get EI because you have other income. He has other income or she has other income, but it depends how much other income, whether she qualifies or not.
Thanks very much. Let's go to Donald in Toronto with a health question. Go ahead, Donald.
Yes, I'm 67 years old. I haven't had the flu in over 30 years. I caught it off my thumb, and I don't get colds. I've had a cold maybe three times in the last 30 years. I've never had the flu shot. My only bad habit is I smoke cigarettes. I'm around my girlfriend all the time. She gets a cold. She gets a flu. I get nothing. And she can't understand it, and neither can I.
That attitude of I don't get anything, I'm fine, is an attitude that we strongly discourage. Firstly, as a smoker, we know that that is a significant risk factor. And there's no magic shield around any of us that explains that you are never going to be at risk. We are all at risk. And I think it's really important, one, to get the flu shot, even though you believe that you are not going to get the flu. You may be someone who gets the flu, doesn't necessarily get ill, but transmits it to other people. So we really want to discourage that attitude of this doesn't apply to me. It applies to everybody. Physical distancing applies to everybody. And I would strongly, strongly encourage you to stop smoking.
Even if he didn't get sick, is it possible that he might still carry something that would he would pass
100%.
On?
100%. Okay. 100%. That's what community transmission is all about.
It's also kind of like flipping a coin. Just because it's turned up heads the last 25 times in a row doesn't change the odds of it being heads or tails the next time, I guess.
Yeah, it's like true, and unrelated. You cannot have that sense that I'm impervious to this. I'm okay.
I'm talking with Dr. Marla Shapiro and Howard Levitt, employment lawyer. We are taking your questions at 877-518-5151. You can text them as well at 71010. My name is Mark Tui. You're listening to the iHeart Radio Canada Talk Network. This is a special power panel edition across a number of stations that might not normally carry my voice, but feel free to give us a call. As I said, the number is 877-518-5151. We'll be back in a moment. Got lots of questions to ask from the text board. Have a bunch of people here on the phones. Still room for your call if you've got any questions about how to protect your family, how to protect your job, how to protect your business during this time of crisis. Give us a shout. We'll take a short break and be right back on the iHeartRadio Canada Talk Network.
You're listening to The Power Panel, getting answers to the questions you need surrounding the COVID-19 outbreak on the iHeartRadio Canada Talk Network.
Hey, welcome back. My name is Mark Tuohy. We have with us today on the Power Panel our two experts, Dr. Marla Shapiro, who is our CTV medical specialist, and Howard Levitt, employment and labor lawyer with Levitt LLP and host of Employment Law across much of the iHeartRadio Talk network. You hear him Sundays at 1 p.m. Let's start with a question for you, Howard. We've got Dan in Toronto. Go ahead.
Oh, hi there. Listen, my son is on Zacommin with his current employer. Will EI cover, if necessary, of course, his current salary or his previous salary? He was supposed to hear about a permanent position and a managerial position by the end of this month.
Well, it has an averaging provision, so they over the last number of weeks. So, again, I'd suggest you check the EI website to get further details on exactly how much he would get in his particular circumstance. But it's an average provision based on a number of weeks.
Brother runs a restaurant. He's concerned about his employees. He took some steps to ensure their protection the best he could. But obviously, he's an independent businessman. His question is about his obligations to his employees beyond, obviously, the moral obligation.
I'm sorry, I didn't understand the question. Say that again.
His obligations to his employees who are laid off because of the lockdown on restaurants.
Oh, well, he because it's restaurants lockdown as a result of government action, unlike other employees, its frustration applies a doctrine which means there's no entitlement to notice or severance pay. So he actually legally has no obligation to them until business is restored.
I've got a question here for Dr. Shapiro off the text board. Is there any risk of employees catching the virus if I work alone in an office because the virus might come in through the air?
So, you know, people are asking that because, for example, Legionnaires' disease, that was through the common air conditioning system that we saw, and there are other airborne diseases that can do that. We've not seen that with this. So I, at the present time, based on the knowledge we have, and as you know, things are evolving every 5 minutes where this is a moving target, but based on what we know right now, the answer would be no. The biggest risk is being in close contact with somebody. That's the reason for the physical distancing and surfaces to make sure your surfaces are, you know, been cleaned and disinfected.
I'm going to stick with you for a minute, Doc Shapiro. During another text question, during this outbreak, what's the role of the family physician if you're diagnosed with COVID-19?
So the diagnosis right now is not being done by your family doctors because family doctors are not set up to do COVID assessment because of personal protective equipment and so on, which is why we now have the assessment units popping up all over the country. So your role with your family physician, with us, we're doing telehealth. We've got OTN, a virtual platform. My patients see me, I see them. So whatever support you need or questions you might have, that's a good place to turn to, particularly if you have mild to moderate disease and are home and, you know, quarantining on your own. You're going to be home and home alone. If you're not well enough, then you would be in a hospital setting. But we're doing the best that we can to support all of our patients, and we're doing it on a virtual platform.
Deborah in Hamilton, go ahead for Howard.
Mr. Levitt, I'm looking at the temporary layoff notice of a person I'm calling in on behalf of who will be laid off as of close of business today. So they said that the company is going to continue to provide the employer's portion of the contribution towards your benefits. However, this individual is in their 3-month probationary period. So they weren't able to collect OHIP yet, but they did work continuously for the 52 weeks prior to. They just went from one job to the next. What happens to this individual? Does a time on layoff contribute towards that 3 months proviso, and then they can start when they're, hopefully when the world gets back in order and they can go back to work, or do they have to restart their 3-month period before they can initiate with OHIP, et cetera?
Well, that is a function of the employer's plans. So the employer, presumably, from what you've said, has a plan that they don't get benefits for 3 months. So if they don't get benefits for 3 months, then after 3 months, part of which will be on layoff, they'll start being able to contribute to their benefit plan. Until then, they don't have benefits anyway, so the employer is simply probably sending a form letter to everyone, and if you continue benefits, then you can lay off up to 35 weeks without it becoming, under the Employment Standards Act, a termination. In fact, it's a termination at common law, allowing anybody who's laid off to sue for wrongful dismissal. But in your friend's case, she's on probation, so the employer could have simply terminated her. In fact, if she makes it through the 3 months, in her probationary period, she'll have a wrongful dismissal case if she's subsequently terminated or isn't recalled. So actually, she's quite fortunate in the circumstances. Mm-hmm. Most employers would have just said, well, anybody under probation is going to be terminated right now. They didn't say that.
Dr. Shapiro, a question off the text board. This listener would like to know if there's an increased risk factor for someone with stage 2 lymphedema. First off, what is lymphedema?
So lymphedema is for someone who has had surgery, typically, let's say, breast cancer, and has removal of multiple lymph nodes. They have difficulty clearing their lymphatic drainage. We all have lymph, which is fluid that drains through our body, and they can get a swollen arm, for example, and that's called lymphedema, a collection of the lymph fluid leading to edema, which is just a medical word saying collection of fluid. So, you know, swollen ankles, edematous ankles, that type of thing. So the reason for the lymphedema, if it's, for example, something like after a lymph node dissection with breast cancer, is because you lack the lymph nodes to do the drainage. From my point of view, that isn't a condition that impairs your immune system. So I don't think that we would necessarily think of that as being a heightened risk in terms of immune compromise. When we see immune compromise, that's either through disease, acquisition of disease, or through medications that can leave you immune compromised, or through particular illnesses. And the illnesses that we've seen is hypertension, diabetes. And that may be just because it's an older population that mostly has hypertension and diabetes. So I think that I would not particularly think of this individual as being high risk.
Thanks. Let's hear from Adrian in Woodbridge. Got a question for Howard.
Howard, my question is right now I need to stay at home to take care of my kid from school, and if they're allowed to go back to school in the near future, and that means I can go back to work. If I was laid off from work shortly after that, would my weeks of entitlement for EI be reset from the date that I returned to work? Would I lose all those weeks of entitlement that I had just before I left to take care of my kid at home?
Well, the government's actually enacted new legislation. It hasn't yet been put into law, so all we have is conceptual legislation announced by Trudeau that says you'll get protection in your circumstances. And as a result of having to stay home to protect your family members or take care of your family members who are home from school or otherwise, EI steps in, and it will not reduce the EI you ultimately obtain. But again, we haven't seen the legislation, so this is only the conceptualization of the legislation that Trudeau has pronounced. So right now it appears that you'll be fine and protected in that respect. But again, when the legislation comes down in final format, it might be otherwise.
Thanks very much. I've got a whole bunch of great questions here on the text board. Maybe we can do sort of a lightning round as we're getting into the final minutes of the power panel. Dr. Shapiro, let's start with this. A lot of us are reading online what I would classify so far as rumors coming out of China that are worrying about the effects of COVID-19 on men's reproductive capability. What's your assessment?
So I haven't seen anything in the literature that has supported that at all. We don't have that data, so I can't answer that.
Howard, for you, can I top up wages? For example, if my employees, I lay them off, they get EI, and as a nice employer, I want to top up their pay to make up the difference.
You can pay with them whatever you wish. But again, understand that if you pay them, if you reduce their income by less more than 17%, that triggers a constructive dismissal. And topping it up will be still less than 83% of their salary. So you're still at risk. But, you know, the employees in the circumstances might be appreciative of your efforts and therefore not sue you.
And
but
would the courts look on that beneficially? Are the people who have visited hospital for reasons not related to the virus, do they have to quarantine themselves for 14 days when they get home?
No, you have to quarantine yourself if you've been exposed to someone who is a known case. So in a hospital setting, we don't see that as being any different than anywhere else. And certainly anyone who's coming in for COVID assessment is being kept physically distanced in a different part of the assessment center.
Howard, most of my income as a restaurant server comes from tips. Can I include tips as income in my EI application?
As I understand the law presently, no. But again, there's special legislation that's been introduced by Trudeau, and he might take that in consideration. By the way, in the context of a wrongful dismissal claim, you can include your tips in income, but not in the case of EI.
Well, you're supposed to claim them for tax purposes, right?
Uh, well, you're supposed to, yes.
I guess that this might come back to haunt you. Doc Shapiro, what temperature is high temperature for COVID symptoms?
In terms of fever?
Yeah.
If we look at the data that's come out of China, we've seen all ranges of fever, ranging from 100 degrees and larger. So it's, some people have the feeling that it's like, you know, raging fever, 102, 103, 104. We've seen that. But in the data set, particularly in the data set we saw with kids, there was somewhere there was very low fever.
I'm going to stick with you for one last medical question. Any truth to rumors on social media that gargling with hot water and lemon or salt will eliminate the virus from my throat?
I think you can probably answer that one.
I'm going to guess no.
Good guess.
There you go. We're going to take this question from an independent contractor for Howard. Justin in Ottawa, go ahead quickly, please.
Hi there. So as an independent contractor, basically, we can't really work now because no one wants us in our homes. We can't apply for EI unless we're sick or taking care of someone that's sick or has children, et cetera. What can one like me expect from all this?
Well, the government just introduced new legislation protecting people who are affected in the way that you are, up to $450 a week, that are not eligible for EI. The other question, of course, is whether you're genuinely an independent contractor at law, because most people who think of themselves as independent contractors really are employees, so you may have the protection of being an employee. Again, I don't know your circumstances.
So
you might be a dependent contractor
with
primarily one client, and that makes you not an independent contractor.
Doc Shapiro, last question for you. We talked earlier about Prevnar 13 virus and that it doesn't protect from COVID, but is there anything in it that might weaken my immune system if I took it?
First of all, it's not a virus. Prevnar is against the pneumococcal bacteria.
Right.
And we encourage individuals over the age of, all of our kids get Prevnar as part of a routine series of vaccinations. As far as adults are concerned, the vaccine is licensed for use for individuals who have underlying conditions, for example, asthmatics and so on. But after the age of 50, you can have a Prevnar vaccine to prevent against pneumococcal pneumonia. No, there's nothing in there that's going to weaken your immune system.
Thanks very much. Dr. Marla Shapiro is a CTV medical specialist. Our guest, Howard Levitt, is an employment and labor lawyer with Levitt LLP, and he's the host of Employment Law across much of the iHeartRadio Talk Network. I know there were a lot more questions for Howard, but you can catch him again tomorrow at 1 p.m. on the iHeartRadio Network with Employment Law. He takes questions live there every Sunday afternoon. This has been another Power Panel brought to you on the iHeart Radio Talk Network. My name is Mark Tuohy, and I hope that you are keeping yourself and your family and your money and your job and your business safe.